It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 108 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
So Carson, we are in a very tournament-heavy season right now. We're coming still fresh off of the Omaha Regional, going into Adepticon here, and then we have actually a few more tournaments in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, I've been to four regionals and now heading to a system open. So we've both had a lot of experience with the X-Wing tournament structure, and so we thought it might be a good idea to take a few minutes and talk about the fundamentals of the X-Wing tournament structure, particularly the Swiss round system and margin of victory in X-Wing.
Yeah, so today we're going to talk about the Swiss tournament structure, the good and bad of that system, and we're also going to dive into and look a little bit at what margin of victory is and how you can leverage this system into your advantage.
And just a hint, it starts well before you even show up to the tournament.
It sure does. Let's get into it.
All right, Tim. So the Swiss part of a tournament, the Swiss rounds, is actually the part that we're pretty good at. It's just the thing after Swiss that we're not so good at.
I've been cursed. Recently broke the curse at the Omaha Regional of getting into the top cut and then just losing out immediately once we get into elimination rounds. So for people who don't know, if you're not familiar with the term Swiss rounds, what we're actually talking about is something you've probably engaged with at your local tournament. Swiss rounds is a tournament structure often used at premier events leading into a top cut or at your local store events, just as the entirety of the event determining which player is the best at the store. It's basically a system for matching players up within same score groups to try and determine who the best players are and rank them accordingly.
Yeah, so the Swiss tournament structure is a non-eliminating tournament format with a set number of rounds. So that means if your tournament's set at six rounds of Swiss, then everybody who shows up will play six games of X-Wing. And then after that, you'll look at the scorings from the Swiss rounds to determine who will make it into an elimination cut, determine the winner. Or if there's not an elimination cut, then who has the highest scoring after the Swiss rounds would be the tournament winner.
Yeah, and our focus today is really going to be on tournaments primarily that lead into a top elimination cut, so most of our analogies will be for that. But a lot of this does apply to your local store tournaments where they're just going to be three or four rounds without a top cut there. Margin of victory and all those kind of Swiss conventions are still very important, so you can use these in either type of tournament.
So the Swiss tournament system was first utilized for a chess tournament in Zurich, Switzerland, hence giving the name the Swiss system, and it's since been commonly used for chess, bridge, Scrabble, backgammon, and a lot of other games that I would say I compare X-Wing to.
Yeah, Swiss is a very common format for all kinds of board games and tabletop games, differentiating from what you see in a lot of major sporting events where they'll do things like single elimination brackets or a set schedule so you're not necessarily playing teams with similar scores. One of the things I think is really favorable for Swiss systems in a tabletop game setting is that typically you're only having one player as opposed to a major sporting event where you're going to have multiple players on a team. So it's really nice to see multiple games to see the quality of a player at an event, whereas a team kind of represents the collective abilities of all players on that team.
And its best comparison is, I think, the round robin structure where everyone plays everyone else, which is commonly used for some sporting events. I think the difference there is those events tend to be a bit more of a performance for people to watch, whereas while I think X-Wing games are very enjoyable to watch, there usually isn't too big of a crowd watching, and they don't need to see me play every single person at a tournament. So the Swiss system is sort of an abbreviation of the round robin structure that lets you still have a objective way to determine a winner without having to play all of the opponents.
Yeah, and that's really the core of it there. It just provides a good avenue where you're not, obviously, it's not practical to play every other player in a tournament, so this gives you a good way to determine good players by matching them up within score groups. And that's really at the heart of the Swiss structure. Your first round, obviously, you're going to be assigned a random opponent, but every round thereafter, you're always going to be paired up against someone within the same score group. So if you win your first round, you're going to get paired up against someone who also won their first round. If you win your second round, you're then going to get paired up against someone who won their second round. And this is generally the rule with the occasional pair up or down for odd numbers of tournament players.
Right, and I do enjoy that X-Wing doesn't just have all single elimination rounds or double elimination rounds either. I mean, even though if you've gotten two losses, your chance of making a cut are very slim, you still did show up there to play games. And at the end of the day, that's what you get to do. However many rounds of Swiss, that's at least how many rounds of X-Wing you're guaranteed to play.
Well, and I always encourage new players and players who've been playing for a long time to play it out, because that is really good experience. Even if you end up in a score group where you have really no chance of making that top cut, you're still going to gain a lot of knowledge by playing against additional opponents, and that's going to get you ready for the next tournament. And it's always going to be a different opponent, too, because in a Swiss tournament structure, you're never going to be paired against the same player twice within the Swiss rounds. You might end up facing a player again if you make it to the top cut rounds, but that's well past the point that we're going to talk about today.
And it's fun. That's the end of the day why we play the game, because it's fun. We've talked about the number of rounds, and that's sort of set by how many rounds you need to have one undefeated player, or sometimes if you're going to have elimination rounds, as few undefeated players as you can have.
Yeah, so in a typical Swiss tournament structure, the ideal would be to have just one undefeated player after the Swiss rounds are completed. That's not always practical in an X-Wing tournament, so sometimes there'll be a second undefeated player. It's also going to generally, in the Swiss tournament structure, you're going to play enough rounds to include, if there is going to be a cut round, all the players who have just a single loss in that top cut. So Fantasy Flight has detailed a lot of this in their tournament documentation. Based on player numbers, how many rounds of Swiss you're going to have, and how large that cut's going to be, top 4, top 8, top 16, etc. But as a general rule, the Swiss structure provides a way to determine placement going into a top cut, or if you're playing at a smaller tournament like a store tournament, Swiss rounds give you the ability to rank players to determine who's the best at that smaller event.
And one thing that I really like about the Swiss structure is, especially with X-Wing, where there's a lot of variables, I mean, you have all the dice and how they're going to land. But even beyond that, you have your matchups. Some ships are going to be a lot better against your ships than others. And so the Swiss structure does give you a buffer where you can lose one game. So it's hard to roll great for, you know, 6 or 7 games in a row. So the Swiss system does account for that one game where, you know, your cloaking device breaks the first turn you use it, or your range one Fen Rao rolls all blanks.
Yeah, X-Wing is a game with a lot of variants included. Obviously, things like the die rolls can swing heavily for or against your favor. It also is very matchup dependent. So sometimes you'll just end up getting a matchup against a list that's really good against your list, and you don't have a strong chance of winning that game. Having the Swiss tournament structure where you're afforded one, even maybe two losses during Swiss rounds helps compensate for that inherent variance. Now, one thing that the Swiss tournament structure itself doesn't address directly is something that's very necessary on two fronts. You need some kind of tiebreaker, and you need it for two reasons. There are no draws in X-Wing, so you need some way to determine a winning player, even in games where no ships are destroyed or all players' ships are destroyed, some way to break that tie. And you also need a way to determine tiebreakers within score groups. So if you're looking at a top cut, say something like the Omaha Regional, where we had a top 16 cut after 6 rounds of Swiss, the undefeated players made it in, as well as all of the one-loss players, the 5-1 players. But in a top 16 cut, that left a few slots open. So obviously those slots would be filled by players with 2 losses. The only problem is the number of players with 2 losses in their record far exceeded the number of available slots in that top 16. So you need some system of tie-breaking in order to determine which players should go to the top of that 2-loss score group and fill in those top 16 slots.
Right, and so for X-Wing, this is accomplished by the margin of victory system.
Also called MOV. You'll hear us use that phrase a lot.
And so the margin of victory system looks at the points you use to purchase your ships for your list building. So the cost of each of the pilots you take and the cost of the upgrades attached to that pilot. And whenever you destroy one of your opponent's ships, you gain all of the points invested in that ship.
Yeah, the margin of victory system is really built upon the squad building point system that X-Wing has, where the points you use to build your squad also determine how many points you give up to your opponents when they destroy your ships, or how many points you gain when you destroy an opponent's ship. And MOV can actually be kind of confusing. I remember this was a weird point. I didn't fully understand the system when I first started playing, but now I have obviously a much better idea of what's going on here. It's really a 200-point scale. So the way you determine MOV after a game is you're going to have a baseline of 100, And if you win the match, you're typically going to get points added to your 100. And if you lose the match, you're going to have points subtracted from your 100.
Right. So the largest win you can have in X-Wing is a 200-0 game where you destroyed all of your opponent's ships and lost none of your ships. All of your large base ships were above half health. So you took all of their points and gave up none of yours. The closest game you could have would be 100-100, where you tied with your margin of victory being the same at time and then had to roll a final salvo to determine who won.
But obviously, a lot of your games are going to end up somewhere in between there. You usually don't see a lot of games ending at equal points in margin of victory. Typically, what's going to happen is you're going to destroy X amount of an opponent's points, and they're going to destroy Y amount of your points, and you're going to compare the difference between those two. So let's look at an example of if me and Carson are playing a game and Carson wins, as he usually does. Let's say we hit time. We haven't destroyed all of each other's ships, so we're going to have to compare destroyed points. So in this example, we'll say Carson destroyed 70 points of my ships, and I only destroyed 30 points of his.
Man, I gave up 30 points.
So we're going to take that lower value of 30 from the losing player, subtract that from the winning player's points destroyed of 70, leaving us with 40 points. Since Carson won, we're going to take that baseline of 100 and add 40 to it. That'll be his margin of victory, and we'll take that baseline of 100 and subtract 40 from it since I lost, and my MOV would be 60.
So at the end of a Swiss tournament, you will have all of your win-loss records being your main scoring system, and then within those scoring systems, you'll have your cumulative MOV from all of your rounds.
And really what margin of victory does is it's a method to determine the quality of a win or a loss. So it's measuring those points destroyed, and it tells you whether or not it was a strong win or a strong loss or a really weak win or a really bad loss. So if there's a wide difference between the points destroyed, that's going to create a stronger win and a more harsh loss. Conversely, if you can get that margin to be very narrow, even if you lose the game, that's going to help you protect your margin of victory for when it comes time to see those tiebreakers.
Yeah, and this margin of victory point system is generally pretty accurate representation of how a player's done throughout the course of a day.
Yeah, and it provides a good amount of granularity and nuance in a lot of aspects of X-Wing. It makes list building really interesting. You have to be very aware of common point builds for ships so you can try and beat those out. And it also adds value to not spending points in your list and holding onto that bid because those points are effectively included in your last remaining ship on the board.
It's also, while not perfect, much better than the next alternative, which would be the strength of schedule system, which is a ratio value determined by the win record of your opponents that you played. A higher ratio would mean you've played tougher or more successful opponents that day, and a lower value means the opponents you played against did not do as well that day.
Yeah, and strength of schedule is actually a tiebreaker you use after margin of victory. If you happen to end up in the same score group as another player and have the exact same margin of victory, you'll see this sometimes on tournament software where it has that little SOS. This is very seldom used just because there is a fair amount of granularity in margin of victory so that it's not that common for players to share an exactly the same margin of victory. The problem fundamentally with strength of schedule is that strength of schedule you have really no control over because you're not really deciding which opponents you're going to play, and you have no impact on whether or not they lose the games outside of the game you play against them.
Yeah, and I do really like that about the margin of victory system is, while not perfect, it does put the power in my hands.
Yeah, because your decision-making can affect how much margin you gain or lose.
But margin of victory is not without its downsides. It definitely favors certain ships or list archetypes. Defensive abilities are greatly favored in the margin of victory system, where you get to hold on to your points. If your ship doesn't die, those are points you get to preserve. So generally, the best ships are expensive ships with strong defensive capabilities, be that high agility ships or regenerating platforms. Those are all ships that are favored in the margin of victory system. Small base ships are also favored more because they get to retain all of their hit points, Whereas a large base ship, once you reduce it to half of its starting hit points, hull and shields combined, you get half of the points invested in that. And that was done to address the fact that large base ships inherently cost more and have more hit points than small base ships. So they were much better at holding on to margin of victory. So the half point rule was included to level the playing field.
In talking about large base ships too, it does favor a little bit large base ships with odd hit point totals, it seems. Ships like the Jumpmaster 5000 or the Millennium Falcon, where it takes a little bit more effort and extra damage in order to get them below that half threshold. And oftentimes those are ships that are very good. Obviously the Jumpmaster 5000 has been a great ship in the last couple years of X-Wing. And we've also seen the Millennium Falcon with ships with pilots like Rey doing very well. And I think a lot of that is it does take a little bit of effort to get them down to that half point threshold.
Yeah, so conversely, swarm lists with a lot of low point ships that are generally not that survivable are going to give up a lot of MOV. Even when they're winning, it's hard for them not to lose at least a few ships and give up some points.
Yeah, so the margin of victory system really hurts ships like the Z95 Headhunter or the TIE Fighter, where even if you're flying really well with those ships and you're winning a lot of your games, you're often giving up multiple of those little small ships. So you're always going to be losing those 12, 24, 36 points, and that's going to affect your margin of victory in the long haul, especially if you end up losing in the later rounds of Swiss. Hey, Radio TCX listeners, time for a quick Patreon update. It took us a little while longer than usual, but we're ready to announce our raffle winners for this month. This month, we're giving away two copies of the Zuckuss Alt Art Pilot card from the current regional season. This card is available to people who finish in the top 64 at a regional. And our winners are going to be Philip Selesky from Massachusetts and Keith Teklitz from Colorado. Congratulations, guys. We're also ready to announce our raffle prizes for next month's raffle. We're giving away an Alt Art Rey Pilot card. This was a card available at the 2017 World Championships. And a big prize next month, we're giving away a set of the acrylic stress tokens that are available to people who finish in the top 16 in the current regional season. If you'd like to have a chance at winning either of these prizes, make sure that you become a patron of Radio TCX before the end of this month. You can do that by going to patreon.com/radiotcx and becoming a supporter at any level. A huge thank you to everyone who's been supporting the show. It really drives us and keeps us able to produce this show week to week. We really can't thank you guys enough. And now, back to the cast. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about Swiss tournament structure, and we've talked about margin of victory and how that plays out in a tournament.
So now we're going to talk about how to use that knowledge to your advantage and be successful at Swiss.
Since margin of victory is such an important part of an X-Wing tournament, it's really important that you make decisions so that you can leverage this game system to your advantage.
Yeah, so when you're list building, everyone is thinking about the points of their ships and the upgrades. That's just an inherent part of list building. But you want to keep in mind how those points relate to the margin of victory at the end of a game when you're selecting your ships and upgrade cards.
And where this really comes into play is looking at the amount of points you're investing into a ship versus how survivable it is. The important factor here being, if you're going to invest a lot of points into a ship, you want to be asking yourself some important questions about how likely is this ship going to get destroyed, which means I lose those points, compared to how effective its damage output or usefulness is going to be.
Right. And so while boosting a ship's damage output is a lot of fun, I see a lot of list builders put a lot more effort into damage output than points in protecting that investment, being defensive upgrades, making sure the points you spend stay on the table.
Yeah, because like we said before, margin of victory really favors ships with a lot of strong defensive abilities where you're able to hold those points on the table.
Now, I mean, you could have your offense be your defensive plan. Your opponent's ships never gets to fire, then they're not going to do too much damage to you. But you have to be pretty confident in your ship's damage output abilities to pull that off. So, of course, there's always caveats. But generally, defensive upgrades are going to be much better for having a high margin of victory when you win your games.
And you really want to keep in mind that even ships with similar point investments might have very different survivability. So a prime example of this is comparing a ship like Miranda Donnie, which is a really strong bomb, twin laser turret platform.
Best ship in the game.
Yeah, easily the best ship in the game. Kind of combines all the most effective strategies you can into one ship. Compare Miranda Donnie to another very popular ship like Captain Nim.
One of the best ships in the game.
Who is also a very strong bombing and twin laser turret platform, but is actually less survivable than Miranda Donnie.
Both these ships have pretty comparable damage output and arguably mobility. In fact, I would say Captain Nim has a superior damage output to Miranda Donnie, just in the weight of damage-dealing upgrades that Skurg can take. But Miranda's ability to regenerate shields and that survivability that Slam provides makes her much better at holding on to 40, 45, 50, over 50 points you can upgrade into her. It's surprisingly worthwhile to invest that many points in her because she can stay alive and be worth more than most other opposing one-on-one ships.
So definitely keep in mind when you're looking at ships, even things beyond Miranda Donnie and Captain Nim, is be sure you're asking yourself the question, is the amount of points I'm investing into the ship worth all that effort? Do I expect to lose this ship in most of my games? How many points am I going to end up sacrificing? You really want to ask yourself these questions when you're list building. Another important question to bring up is you want to be very aware of the metagame and common ship point values.
Right, and so when you're comparing other ships' point values, you're looking at the scenario. When I have my late game closer ship, is that going to be worth more than whatever closing ship my opponent might have? If the answer is no, you need to get yourself into a game state where they don't have that ship remaining. But if you do list build and so that your closing ship is worth more than what a closing ship your opponent might have, then you have some options in how you approach your opponent's lists. It gives you some more tactical flexibility within the games you might have during your Swiss rounds.
And it does affect your decision-making process. I actually had a game, my top 16 game at the Omaha Regional, where the point values of ship were very relevant and actually affected what strategy I was going to use. I was facing off against a Rebel Synergy list, and basically I got to a game state where my only remaining ship was my Quick Draw, and my opponent had a damaged Lorik and a pretty much full-up Nora Wexley. And I really had to make decisions here. I was aware of my opponent's ship values. My Quick Draw came in at 43 points, plus I had a one-point bid in my list, so I was effectively holding on to 44 points. And I knew my opponent's Nora Wexley, I believe, was at like 41 points. So I did have a point advantage there. So rather than trying to take down all my opponent's ships, the Nora had R2-D2. So normally that would be my priority target, getting rid of the regenerating ship. I knew if I could just kill the Lorik and then try and play out to time, I would win out on the point advantage.
Right. And that's an opportunity you created for yourself. One, you put perhaps too many points in your Quick Draw, but you did put a lot of defensive upgrades, lightweight frame, advanced optics, expertise. Yes, expertise is a defensive upgrade.
It lets you hold on to your focus token.
Spend your focus only for defense, freeing up your actions to either barrel roll or keep getting focus tokens.
And that made my Quick Draw much more defensive. I was able to endure multiple shots from my opponent's Nora. He knew that he had to kill my Quick Draw in order to win out on this game. And I ended up actually taking that match. Final shot didn't kill me. But that was a really important point there. Had I gone with a cheaper Quick Draw, like the 36-point Quick Draw I'm used to flying, that would have limited my win options there, where I would have to have killed both of my opponent's ships, which I don't think I would have been able to do.
Yeah, so there your heavy point investment in your key closing ship really paid off. I spread my defensive upgrades across both my ships because they're both about equally survivable. Both the Shadowcasters have a lot of room for defensive upgrades. I had 11 upgrade cards across the two, and 9 of them were defensively orientated. Of course, 4 copies of Glitterstim, great defensive boost. 2 copies of Countermeasures also helps you survive a lot. The Lazarazzi crew and Lone Wolf work great for a consistent defensive modification on Asajj. And that Shadowcaster title does really help prevent shots coming back at Ketsu or Asajj.
Yeah, so your list is chock full of all kinds of great defensive upgrades, and they really did pay off and protect your margin of victory, because I believe you ended that day 6 rounds of Swiss in Omaha with a margin of 1072 out of a possible 1200. So that's a really strong margin there, even though you also did go undefeated.
Well, that doesn't hurt either.
another important part of deciding your list when looking at margin of victory in a tournament is you want to decide if you're going to run a list that averages out a little bit or has a greater distribution of variance.
Yeah, and I know you like those more consistent lists where the results can match your expectations for the ship's output.
Yeah, I always like to say that I play for the Swiss rounds, and that's kind of been a curse for me too, getting to those top cuts and then getting eliminated in the first round of top cut. But I always like to focus first on getting through Swiss. So I tend to choose lists that don't have such a big distribution of variance. They have a little bit more consistent performance. I'm not going to be so thrown off by a bad die roll here or there. But at the same time, if you're going for trying to win out in those top cut matches, you might favor a list that's got a little higher potential but is a little more susceptible to the volatility of the game.
Yeah, and I've played both types of lists, either the more consistent one or the high variance. Ships like the Double Shadowcasters are pretty consistent on defense and offense. But ships like Paul of Gadali and Fen Rao, especially the Hawk with the cloaking device, can be pretty varianced, or those Fen Rao attacks or range one defensive rolls. There's quite a range of what you can get there. And with those fewer hit points, some inconsistency can have more drastic results.
But at the same time, when those lists are successful, they're incredibly successful.
Absolutely. If your opponent targets Fen Rao and is never able to push damage through, then that can just easily be a full win if they've wasted their offensive effort there.
Yeah, so really what you're looking at is those lists with higher variance also have a little bit higher potential, so that you have a much better chance of getting those full 200-0 victories with your margin, which is going to give you a huge advantage later on. But you also then risk the volatility there, where if your dice rolls fail on you or your attacks don't do as much damage as you're expecting, the game can quickly spiral out of control for you. There's, you know, advantages to doing both. If you're playing for Swiss, I tend to go towards those more consistent and reliable lists that are less affected by swingy dice rolls. But those more consistent lists also don't give you the same kind of potential they do if you do make it into those cut rounds, where you do want to be using those lists with a higher potential.
Right. I mean, if you play against someone who has a higher variance list and the variance is on their favor, then that's going to be rather difficult for you to fight that uphill battle.
Yeah, and I mean, it is a preference there. What are you going for? I would recommend, especially if you're newer to the tournament scene, to try and find lists that are a lot less volatile. Just that way you can get some consistent performances out of a tournament. Shoot for those 3-3 records or those 4-2 records, or just work hard to start working your way up to those winning records, and then you can start making your way to those top cuts.
Now, once you're at the tournament, you got your whatever list you decided on, either the high variance or the consistent one. Now you got to get one of those winning records to make the cut.
So our first recommendation for when you're actually at the tournament, the most important strategy is just try to win every game.
Yeah, the Swiss system is actually pretty easy if you just don't ever lose.
Though obviously with only one or two undefeated players in most Swiss rounds, that's not necessarily going to be an option for even some of the best players. After that, you're going to have to start making some decisions based on what your record is during those Swiss rounds. Remembering that what score group you're in is really the most important there. First, you got to get as many wins as you can, and then you really got to start looking at what that margin of victory is going to be. And to me, a lot of this is affected by what your record is at a tournament. Say you're about halfway through 5 or 6 rounds of Swiss, and you already have a loss on your books. Well, most people with a single loss in big tournaments are still going to be able to proceed on to the next phase, whether that's the cut round or day two. So at that point, MOV is important, but it's not the most important thing. You're still looking to maximize winning games there. Even if that means sacrificing a fair bit of margin, you're still going to be able to make it into that day two or make it into that top cut, as long as you can maintain a really strong winning record and not get any more losses.
When you're in X1, your goal is to first preserve your win at all costs, and then secondary, keep your MOV as high as possible. When you're in X and 2, your primary goal is MOV as high as possible.
Yeah, because if you're going to make it into those top cuts, you're really going to need to have a strong margin there. So you're going to have to be very aware of how many points you're taking and how many points you're losing. And I think kind of where it breaks down for me is sometimes if you're in that one loss category, you have to make some decisions about how to use your ships. If I'm in the one loss category, I'm more inclined to keep a very damaged ship in the game as an active threat and maybe just to draw a fire from my opponent because they're trying to dig out some margin there. That may involve me losing the ship, but if it lends me to winning that game, I'm really going to try and make sure I use every asset I can to get that win. Now, when you shift over to those X and 2 where you have two losses, you're going to need to be very aware about protecting assets, which means you might have to run away with a ship to protect its points at the risk of not having that resource to help close out the game.
Absolutely. And so when we're talking about, yeah, keeping track of those MOV margins and making sure you're up as high as possible, you want to be looking at your ships that just have a few hit points, where one more attack your opponent could get a big chunk of points. Keep those as far away from your opponent. Make those disadvantageous attacks. Make them run for that ship. And the same goes for large base ships that are just above that half point threshold. That's oftentimes like losing another small base ship, that difference between full and half on a large base ship, depending on how many points you put into them. And it also means having that same thought process for your opponent ships. You should always know, how many points are each of your opponent ships worth? What ships of yours do they need to destroy to get ahead? What ships of theirs do they need to try and protect?
And this is actually something I'll do at the start of a lot of my games. I'll either ask my opponent what all their individual ships are worth point-wise, or when you're looking at the list, just add them up quick in your head so you have a threshold there. So if you do enter a situation where you need to make those hard decisions, like playing to time and trying to win on points, you're able to already have those values in your head and make those decisions without having to ask your opponent what their ships are worth.
I mean, you definitely can ask them at any point in the game, but doing so does telegraph a bit of information about what you're thinking about during the game. As far as target priority.
And it might also bring to their attention something they're not considering if they're not quite thinking about the point value comparisons. If you're saying, hey, how much is your Nora Wexley worth? Oh, it's 41. Oh, his is 43. Suddenly they're aware of that exchange too.
But Asajj is worth 48 until she's not.
So there you have it. Some advice on how to leverage margin of victory in your favor in your list building and in your tournament play. Hopefully you have a pretty good idea of the significance of the Swiss structure in X-Wing and the importance of margin of victory as a tiebreaker.
Yeah, most of you probably thought you'd never think that much about the Swiss system and margin of victory, but it actually is pretty helpful.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. Carson and I are actually going to both be at Adepticon this weekend. So if you're listening on Wednesday when this comes out, we're driving in on Thursday. So we'll be playing in the Friday qualifier for the System Open.
Yeah, so be sure to stop by and say hi.
We should be wearing our signature Radio TCX red shirt, so keep an eye out for those. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, please be sure to go on to facebook.com/radiotcx and like our Facebook page. While you're there, you can also leave us a 5-star review on Facebook, along with a comment saying what you like about the podcast. We've been getting a lot of those 5-star Facebook reviews, and I always enjoy seeing those pop up in our Facebook feed.
You can also follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy the podcast, please be sure to go on to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review, along with a comment saying what you like about the podcast and why other people might be interested in listening.
This week, we want to give a shout out to CarrieF300, who really appreciates the educational side of the very entertaining podcast. Thank you, CarrieF300.
And a huge thank you to everyone else who left us a review on iTunes. Those reviews are really important in us reaching a wider audience, and we appreciate everyone who's taken the time.
We got to pull ahead of Back to Dials. If you want to support the show directly, please consider going on to patreon.com/radiotcx and becoming a supporter of the show today. It really means a lot to us.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.